Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick in for John Hockenberry today. After a week of bloodshed, a barrage of rockets from both sides, scores of dead and many more injured, a ceasefire has been announced in the Middle East. It took effect at 2 p.m. Eastern. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has not completely closed the door on more military action, but speaking at a press conference this afternoon in Jerusalem, said this was time to work toward a, quote, ongoing ceasefire. It is obviously a significant development. In a moment, we're going to have analysis from Daniel Kurtzer, former U.S. ambassador to Israel and to Egypt. We'll hear also from Israel's deputy foreign minister. But first, we want to take a few moments to catch up on a day of many developments. From Gaza, here's the latest report from the BBC's John Donison.
A celebratory gunfire rang out across Gaza within minutes of the bus in Tel Aviv being bombed. A ceasefire began to look remote. Mosques began trumpeting the news, saying Hamas had managed to place the explosives on board. It was feared this act could scupper any deal in the making. Soon after, possibly in retaliation, Israel struck back with massive force, as I was live on air.
John, are you all right?
That is about a kilometre from where we are.
Israel says it's been bombing targets associated with what it calls the terror infrastructure, but civilians, including more than 30 children, have died. Outside a travel agent office, in a row of busted-up shops, we found a few traders, brave enough to venture out to clear up the damage.
My name is Moin Mushtaha. I have this office established from about 50 years ago.
Moin says his business is ruined. He doesn't know where to start.
No, I haven't any insurance here for the office. No.
Right up to the last minute, before the ceasefire deal was announced, the firing continued. Airstrikes and rockets. The question is, can the truce stick and end a decades-long cycle of Gaza having to build itself up, only to be knocked down again? John Donison, BBC News, Gaza.
Our thanks to John Donison reporting on the day's events from the Gaza Strip there. Earlier, I spoke with Israel's Deputy Foreign Minister Danny Ayalon about the violence in the region. Now, given the number of rockets fired, the deaths and injuries on both sides, I wondered what, if anything, he thought Israel had achieved in the past week.
Hopefully, deterrence. And if the Hamas will think twice and more than twice for the next time, when they want to fire at kindergartens or malls or places of or parks, this will have been worthwhile. Although, unfortunately, too late for the six Israelis killed and for the hundreds of thousands of children who have been traumatized.
And for the hundreds of Palestinians killed as well. Not all of the
Absolutely.
People who've been killed by Israeli rockets are militants.
Absolutely, Todd. And here I can tell you that, we have been very, very careful. And I think that although every innocent death is tragic and it's hard to make comparison, but I think we have been much more accurate and than other operations. We are studying from past operations and mistakes. And if you compare the situation in Gaza, let's say, to the situation in Syria today, where the Assad regime just mercilessly butchers people and children, there is a big difference. And I would say that most of the people that were hit in Gaza deserved it, as they were just armed terrorists.
Danny Ayalon, one of the forces marginalized in this current conflict, of course, is the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, who you have been able to talk to in the past. Is there not an opportunity here, maybe in the next weeks or months, not today, to get back to the table with the Palestinian Authority on a broader solution, that has the side benefit, perhaps, of marginalizing Hamas, which it seems might be a common interest of both the Palestinian Authority and Israel.
Absolutely. And we are still waiting at the table. It was unfortunate that almost 4 years went by, actually wasted because of the Palestinian Authority under the leadership of Abu Mazen refused the direct negotiations. They put a lot of hurdles and preconditions whereby had they been talking to us with mutual respect, I think many of the problems could have been passed. But this stubbornness about preconditions and on the one hand and on the other hand not really recognizing our right for self-determination, whether it's a Jewish state or our needs for security arrangements, all these things should be on the table and could be discussed. I hope that this will be an opportunity for Abu Mazen to rethink and not go for a unilateral moves at the UN or anywhere else against all the understandings and past agreements with them and come to the table. This is high time to do that.
Danny Aiello is Israel's deputy foreign minister, also former Israeli ambassador to the United States. Ambassador, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Israel's deputy foreign minister there. According to the Hamas health ministry in Gaza, the Palestinian death toll had reached 140 by noon, with a third of those being militants. Just five Israelis were killed, including one soldier, in more than a week of fighting. Joining me now is former U.S. ambassador to Israel and serving ambassador to Egypt, Daniel Kurtzer. He's now a professor at Princeton University. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you, Todd.
Help us understand a ceasefire in this context, if you will. They tend to be fragile. Even at this moment, we're seeing sporadic reports on Twitter and elsewhere that even though it's after the hour of the ceasefire, sirens still going off and some attacks still ongoing. So put ceasefire into context, what it means now, what it might mean 24 hours from now.
Well, fragile is a strong word in this context. The actual text of the ceasefire is very, very modest. Basically says both sides should stop shooting. And then they say that 24 hours later, they're going to actually start discussing via Egypt issues related to border crossings and things like that. So this is a very general understanding that has been reached. The good news will be if the firing actually stops, but one can imagine it will take some time for other groups in Gaza other than Hamas to be persuaded to buy into it. And as long as the rocket fire continues, the Israeli responses will continue. Even assuming that within the next 24 hours the actual ceasefire takes place, the fragility is going to be the key word. Hamas has definitely emerged from this round of violence politically strengthened. The civilian casualties, whatever their number, have raised great concern in the broader Arab world, especially now in the throes of all the changes that are taking place. And standing on the sidelines has been the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas. You know, Danny Aiello, the Israeli deputy foreign minister, just said that they're kind of waiting to start talking. If that's the case, then this would be a phenomenal moment for Israel to unveil an initiative which brings Abbas back to the table. I think both sides just can't wait for the other to take the initiative.
Would unveiling such an initiative now or in the near future help marginalize Hamas, which is something both sides want? I discussed that with the ambassador.
Oh, sure. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. But if you ever want to go down that path, you can't marginalize them only through a military victory, which is what Israel is going to say that it achieved here. It degraded Hamas's military capabilities. It knocked out some long-range missiles. The Iron Dome anti-missile system seemed to work pretty well. But if you want to translate that into something more enduring, then you've got to translate this into a political process. And that's going to take initiative, not by waiting for the other side, but by taking the initiative oneself.
So let's talk about the border, Ambassador Daniel Kurtzer, because you brought it up, and that's a key concern of the Israelis. When they said they wanted a durable solution here, they were referring to not just a temporary stop in hostilities, but no more weapons coming in over the border. They've never been able to achieve that in the past. And I wonder if that's something that Gazans or Egyptians can actually deliver. And the corollary to that, of course, is the Palestinian concern that any tightening of the border means a tightening of normalcy for them, food, services, free movement. How are those two imperatives likely to push against each other now in the coming days?
Well, it's actually one of the more interesting questions to be posing now and to be looking at over the next few days. As part of this deal, I have no doubt that Hamas and Egypt are going to start discussing opening up the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt on a more permanent basis. It's now open for the transit of people, but it's not open for the transit of goods. And that has forced commerce underground, literally, into tunnels, but it's also allowed the underground traffic to include arms smuggling. So there's an advantage here for almost everybody to have a regulated system of entry and exit into Gaza. The Egyptians presumably would demand an end of the tunnel traffic. The Israelis would then want the Egyptians to supervise any arms smuggling. And the Hamas and the Palestinians would gain from it a more regular commercial and human route in and out of that district. So this is the tough next step of how you translate the stopping of fire into something that actually benefits at least the people on the ground and Israel. Unfortunately, I think Hamas is going to also benefit, but that is a byproduct that we may have to live with.
Ambassador, finally, has there been a proof of concept here, the fact that there may have been a trust-building exercise between the United States and Egypt? There is a new government there. Morsi is not our guy the way Mubarak was for so many decades. Took the lead in brokering at least this part of the deal. Was that a trust-building exercise between Egypt and the United States?
Oh, for sure. And I think it's lessons that we're all going to take quite seriously. First of all, the fact that Egypt did criticize Israel and withdrew its ambassador, but then went to work, the hard work of putting pressure on both Israel and Hamas to bring this to an end. This is a posture we haven't seen from the Egyptians for quite some time, and it's the more striking under the Morsi government, number one. Number two, the fact that the United States, which of course could not deal with Hamas, we don't have a dialogue with them, was willing to, in a sense, use our good offices behind the scenes, supporting Israel, but also supporting the efforts that Morsi was making. And the fact that at least we've got this initial success, I think is very important, not just for Egyptian interests, but the fact that Obama and Morsi can now talk to each other and say, you know, we've got this thing under our belt. Maybe we can do more together.
And we will be keeping our eyes on these developments both in the coming hours, Ambassador, and in the days ahead, apropos to what you're speaking of there. Former U.S. Ambassador to Israel and serving Ambassador to Egypt, Daniel Kurtzer, now a professor at Princeton. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Todd.
We'll leave you now with some sounds from Gaza, celebratory gunfire heard in the city after the announcement of the ceasefire.